This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
This song is dedicated to those that lost their life in Orlando, Florida, and anybody that has been victim of senseless violence or hatred. Who wants to live?
Along with Adam Lambert, dedicating Who Wants to Live Forever to the Orlando victims. In the studio joining me this hour is Darcy Drollinger.
That's right.
Look at that, I got it. Director of Sex and the City, I know that. And Valerie is here, along with Brian Pelletier. And, we want to talk about Sex and the City, but you want to talk about Pride and what happened in Orlando and versus San Francisco with the gay pride parade right around the corner.
Yeah.
So,
I'd love to, let's talk about Sex and the City, but before that, it has been a really intense time for the whole community here in San Francisco.
It's been a horrible weekend.
And I think, you know, as an owner of one of the largest gay clubs in San Francisco, we can't all help but think, well, this could have happened to us, you know, and it's a really interesting place to be, trying to figure out how to balance between, you know, a police state situation and combating this violence with a giant party, you know, because I truly do think, you know, finding our fabulousness and expressing that is contagious, and it is a way of social change and combating violence. So, you know, if we give that up, you know, we lose to them.
Well, Darcy, I have to say, you couldn't have been booked on a more perfect night, and I apologize that we've pumped you so many times because of the Warriors games. They kept winning. What can we say? That's a good thing. But on a serious note, as a club owner, as a gay club owner, it's got to be so gut-wrenching as it is for the entire community.
It is so hard because it does feel like, I mean, it is our community. It
right.
really is our community. And it's a really hard place to be where you've got I got my staff asking me, are we going to have armed guards?
Right. Yeah.
You know, but is that what we want? I mean, who wants to go to a club filled with armed guards? And at the same time, you want them to feel safe to go to work. You want your patrons to feel safe coming in and being able to relax and have a good time and not looking over their shoulder, expecting somebody to walk in the door. It is a balance.
But it is a balancing game, right.
And at the same time, you know, if we give in to that, I mean, after 9/11, people flew the next day.
Yes.
You know, they did get on an airplane the next day. And it took the courageous people. My mother actually flew the day after 9/11, obsessed to see one of my shows. She flew to New York. And
I remember President Bush addressing the country, go out and do your business.
Right.
Yes, go shop.
Because,
yes, go
because
do your
you know,
thing.
If yeah. all of a sudden none of us go out and all of a sudden we stay locked in our houses, because the truth of the matter is anyone could walk down the street and shoot a bunch of guns off. I mean, we trust all of our fellow Americans or everyone in our society to not drive their car into us, to not do all these things. I mean, we trust each other. And so when something like this happens, you know, if we can't let it overcome us, but we do have to take precautions.
Darcy Drollinger is my guest, and he owns a gay club here in San Francisco. What do you say? Area code 415-808-0810. So will you install metal detectors?
You know, we have a large meeting tomorrow to discuss that. We're also going to City Hall. Scott Wiener and a number of other people are actually hosting a large community meeting with all the gay nightlife owners to discuss how we're going to deal with Pride and the rest of this month, because it is, you know, it is the Mardi Gras of San Francisco, is where everyone comes all over the country.
It's the Super Bowl all over again without the traffic mess, but let's face it, I mean, we all need that protection now.
Exactly. And we, even if nothing does happen, people need to feel safe, and it's worth the precaution to feel safe, but it is, you don't want to completely sacrifice the joyous celebration. So it is this interesting balancing act, and I don't think there's a final answer to it, but I do think that it is worth taking a little extra precaution now, for sure.
Darcy, one of the things that crosses my mind, you know, and we'll talk about this lunatic who did what he did in Orlando coming up here in the next segment, but even the haters. Even if you're listening to me now and you say, well, GD, gays, whatever, this, that, or the other, you have to remember something. They were in a place of their own. They were not bothering anyone else. They were there where they assemble. Just like a religion, religion A assembles here, religion B assembles here, heterosexuals assemble here, blacks assemble there. So they were not... They were in their place where they felt like it was a safe place.
Exactly.
Yeah. There was nothing flagrant going on.
No. But I mean, it's just as bad as those people going to those churches and shooting everybody.
That's right.
I mean,
that's right.
It
yes.
is in
Charlotte.
But the horrible part about it are when you've got these pastors and ministers rejoicing that this happened. Because
did you hear that from Sacramento?
So disturbing. Like, it's unbelievable. But, you know, I went to his Facebook page, the Facebook page of that church, and hundreds of comments.
Yeah, let's play it in case you haven't, if you're just joining us. I know we keep replaying it. If you're listening to me through a four-hour shift, well, God bless you. But if you do the usual 10 minutes, you didn't hear it. So take a listen. Yes, from Sacramento.
Is the pastor of Verity Baptist Church in Sacramento.
Hey, are you sad that 50 pedophiles were killed today? No, I think that's great. I think that helps society.
He goes on to preach that the U.S. government should take a cue from the shooter.
I wish the government would round them all up, put a firing squad in front of them, and blow their brains out.
He's not a man of God.
Sandrea Nelson tells Sacramento's KOVR-TV that this kind of hate speech results in more violence, even suicide, among those in the gay community.
It can definitely cause more harm.
Efforts to reach Jimenez have been unsuccessful.
Well, no kidding.
I'm Jim Roop.
Yeah, I mean...
That's hate speech.
And it is. And
scary.
It was so scary. And that kind of... Putting that out there for their congregants is what continues this cycle. And it is only going to change when our politicians and our religious leaders stop.
Well, you know what, Darcy? And I have to tell you something. Sick bastards like this son of a bitch. I have to say this. Him, somewhere in his family, some people in that congregation, in their extended families, they're gays.
Totally.
So when you're saying that... You're just stepping on the people you're trying to talk to and try to promote love. And that's not love, and that's not peace.
It actually is insanity. It is mental illness, I think. I mean, it is crazy. It's like they've been brainwashed. I don't understand it. It's shocking. But like I was saying, you go to the Facebook page, you go to the Yelp page, and it's amazing to see the amount of people who have just overcome those pages. Their Yelp page was 5 stars. Now it's 1, and they've had so many 1-star ratings and photos of dog feces have filled up all the photo sections.
A photo is worth 1,000 words.
Emojis, yeah.
Because I was so incensed. I'm like, who are these people?
Who
when I did
says
a little research.
That? Right. I mean, you know, you would not. And by the way, you would think California would be the last place where that's coming out of. I'm not surprised that I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm sure it is, but I'm not looking for it. I'm sure it's all over the place across the country. But
it makes you realize how much work there is to do. I feel like we've been complacent. Like, oh, yes, gay marriage passed, and so everything is great and hunky-dory.
No, it feels like backlash.
Yeah, no. I mean, we are dealing with a certain amount of people that really do want things to go way backwards.
Oh, sure.
I mean, way back. I was talking to a friend today.
Payback time.
There's an organization that actually has an organization that still believe that they're saying the world is flat and science is trying to pull a fast
one. Sherry Shepherd used to be on The View and... Who else said it? I don't know. I got to take a break. You're listening to the Drex Radio Show. Darcy Drollinger is my guest, and he owns a gay nightclub, and he's also the director of Sex in the City. We'll talk about that and more coming up. If you have any comments, the area code is 415, now that we're broadcasting the entire Western Coast, 415-808-0810. 808-0810 to the Drex Radio Show. With a look at traffic, here's Lee Graham. All right, we're back, and Darcy Drollinger is my guest, and he owns a gay nightclub here in San Francisco, and...
The Oasis.
The Oasis, and is the director of Sex in the City. We're just talking about the attack on Orlando and how it is going to affect the gay clubs here in San Francisco, and Gay Pride is right around the corner. You know, I was just showing you a picture of this guy, and I refuse to say his name. But it's the picture, and I think we've all seen them, the guy where he's sitting in the car. That picture right there.
Right.
When I saw him on Saturday, and that's all I needed to see, I said, he's gay. Ding, ding.
Yep.
And turns out he is, or he was.
Yes.
And his father said these horrible things. His father's now trying to blame the Pulse nightclub for not having enough security. They should have had heavier security when you have a group of 300 or 400 people being entertained at once, which is insanity. His father's from Afghanistan. Obviously, he does not accept his son. He would never, at least this murderer that he is, would in his mind, he would never be accepted by his family or his religion. So I think he was self-loathing, self-hating.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could have 20 security guards. But someone comes in with a semi-automatic rifle, they're all down in a second.
But I have to say this, Darcy. There's part of me that says when he was killing those other people, he was also killing himself on purpose, too.
Absolutely.
Because he hated what he was.
Absolutely.
And that's a damn shame.
And it is a shame that that is still happening now. It's, you know, 2016. And it is, again, it goes to the fact that there are still so many religious figures and politicians that are really condemning homosexuality.
Yeah. Let me play this cut for you because, okay, so this is the murderer's father talking about how the Pulse nightclub is responsible.
If the owner of this club knew that 300 people are coming or 400 people, they should have had the best security. And I wish if there was security, would have eliminated him, this tragedy would not happen.
Really? So really putting the blame onto somebody else,
right.
Really, is
yes.
That, again,
yes.
More tragedy.
When you probably weren't accepting of your own son.
Yeah.
And that's probably what has been driving him back crap since he was in fifth grade and started causing trouble. Yeah. We all can identify with our own sexuality at a very early age.
Sure, of course.
Yes. Of course. All right. Do I? Yes.
Well, and you also get to the point, Drex, where how much security do you need? Are they going to have to bring in armored vehicles? Or what level of security is going to stop something like that? I would think it would have to be pretty high.
I mean, again, it would not have gone down the same way if he didn't have access to that kind of a weapon.
Right. And he was investigated by the FBI
twice.
And he was red flagged. And I did talk to an FBI, former FBI.
Profiler.
Profiler, yeah. And he was great. But he talked about the whole fact that, you know, once they're cleared, they have to be cleared because sometimes they make mistakes and you don't want to be on that list for the rest of your life if you're cleared. I don't know. But it's disturbing. And then I asked him, I said, well, doesn't this filter down to the Justice Department? He goes, yeah, that's a lot of yickety yak going on there. Basically, well, they don't get along. Loretta Lynch and the FBI. Of course they don't. No.
Right.
No, it's all dirty politics. And so, you know, but I said to him, I said, well, don't you think that needs to change? He goes, yes, after this, I do think that it needs to change. Well, we say this every time.
Right.
And then nothing changes.
It's lip service. Just like, you know, when they had the moment of silence. Like these moments of silence And yes, I appreciate that, and I appreciate the prayers for everyone, but that doesn't stop it. It's not, it's just, it does not change the situation, and it doesn't stop it from happening again.
All right. By the way, Darcy is the owner of the Oasis Gay Nightclub right here in San Francisco. Let's go to Tom in Gilroy. You're on KGO.
Yeah, hi. I was just listening to the show here, and first off, let me put out a bit of a disclaimer. I'm a conservative, and I'm a conservative through a lot of considered thought, and I can defend my positions. But I'm also, I believe that gay people are wired every bit in a way committed to their direction as I am as a heterosexual. So I want them to be comfortable in their own skin.
Great.
As I want to be comfortable in my skin.
That's why I said the Pulse nightclub. They're in their lane. You know, how dare this guy say they weren't?
Exactly.
Yes.
But as somebody that has a graduate degree in biology, if we're going to perpetuate the species, you know, our way is the right way. Their way is the wrong way as far as perpetuation of the species. But for some reason, we're not all in the heterosexual lane, and I can accept that. But what I
Well, that was a genetic screw up somewhere, so I guess you have to blame God.
Right.
Okay.
Maybe so.
Yes.
But what I believe we would be so much better off is if we can do away with political correctness. Let me kind of jump over the old, back to the old way. I was a kid in the 50s, and back then they were called queers. If somebody calls somebody a queer today, we want to know who they are. We don't want to drive it underground. We want to change the way people think rather than get them to suppress the way they think. The same thing with racism. People that used to use the N-word, if I can be so bold enough to say it here, you know, the word nigger, it was more common in the 50s. Okay, well, if somebody was to call that today, I want to know what my neighbor thinks so I can pull away from them. I don't want them to drive it underground. We got to start saying what's in our heart. And I believe the trend over the last few decades has been this political correctness that I think is hurting us. It is really hurting us. Somebody talked earlier about gun control. Gosh, you know, maybe we can curb this stuff if we have more gun control. I grew up in the 50s. Every kid had a cap gun.
I did too. In the 60s. I agree with you, but I thank you for the call, and I'm not being disrespectful.
Well,
I just don't want to get into the gun control issue. I just don't. I mean, I just don't. I just don't.
That's fair.
Yeah, let me tell you. I want to tell you when the right time to talk about gun control is. In between these massacres, with an ounce of civility, like we did not have in Congress today or yesterday, where people are walking out, where people are booing, where you know, the president has to be screaming, where Trump has to be tweeting, that's when we have the discussion.
But we have to have it.
Yeah,
eventually.
We have to have it. Yeah,
and we can't just let it go. I mean, you would think they would have had the conversation after all those little kids, but it didn't happen.
Sandy Hook. No,
it didn't happen.
No, it's the same thing. We had lots of silence. We had lots of prayers,
and then go on about our business. Pretend maybe it will never happen again. Fingers crossed.
Right.
Well, guess what?
These moments of silence are deafening.
They are. All right, I have to take a break. And by the way, Tom, I do appreciate your call, especially being conservative, because I'm not either. I call it the way I see it too, and I agree with some of the things that you said, but we're going to move on. All right, let's take some more calls. 808-0810 is the number. Darcy Drollinger. Why do I want to call you? I'm going to call you Dollinger. I'm going to get rid of that R.
Because Darcy is adorable as a doll. That's why.
There you go.
As a drawl?
There
as
you go.
She's very droll.
Droll. Okay, we'll be back. You'll listen to the Drex Radio Show with a look at traffic. Here is Lee Graham. Sex in the City, everybody. All right, we're lightening things up. It's been a heavy several days for all of us. So, Darcy Drollinger is also the director, besides owning the nightclub. Yes, Oasis. You are the director of Sex in the City.
I also play Samantha Jones.
Oh, you know, you know what I found? 7 most messed up things about Sex in the City.
Uh-oh.
So let's see what I find about Samantha. Samantha Miranda Carey. Samantha dates a black man, and the plot is just blank, blank, blank. Sex in the City screenwriters do just about everything to fetishize Siobhan, a successful black music executive for whom the voracious Samantha falls hard. She doesn't see color. She only sees conquest. She tells her friends that he has a big black something or another. I didn't pre-read like this, peeps.
Right. Okay. It's like a chicken, but not.
Right, yes. Samantha says she thought all of his hip-hop had a hard edge. Siobhan's sister, who portrayed an angry black woman stereotype, doesn't like her brother dating a white woman. Samantha responds by telling her sister that she has a big black ass and that okra served in the sister's restaurant isn't all that. I'm going to throw up all over Samantha's gold leather hip-hop outfit.
Well, we don't do that episode yet, though. It is on the docket coming up.
Oh, it is.
It's actually, it's a pretty funny episode all in all. And especially when we do it, since, you know, I was going to have the same person play the sister and the brother.
Oh, God.
Which would be pretty hilarious.
Yes.
So it's an all drag version of it. So, you know, we also do the Golden Girls in December.
Oh,
it's almost like pre-Golden Girls. There's the four women and... we're in our 5th year doing it. We have done a lot of episodes, but we have not done that one yet.
That's crazy. So you go back and dissect every one of these episodes and then perform them.
Correct. Now, sometimes...
How many are there?
Well, there's 6 seasons. There's a lot of episodes.
Okay.
The thing is, sometimes there's 2 or 3 great storylines, but maybe another one that is not. So we'll... Sometimes I mash them up. So
right.
When I adapt them for stage, I may take 2 storylines from one episode, another one. So they become kind of these greatest hit mashups of the show.
Yeah, because not everybody remembers every single episode.
But you'd be crazy. We get lots and lots of women that come. They get all dressed up. They come with their girlfriends. They're like, I'm a Samantha. I'm a Charlotte. They order their Carrie Cosmos.
Yes,
and they have their Sex in the City experience. And I would say the majority, when we first started the show.
It's like LARPing.
It's kind of crazy. When we first started doing.
Can I be Mr. Big?
We have an amazing female Mr. Big.
Oh, I bet
drag
you do.
King.
Yes, drag king, yes.
Lee Crow, she's hilarious. She also plays Captain Kirk when we do Star Trek.
Oh, she is great. She is
really
great.
Good.
Oh, I want to see the Star Trek.
We're doing that in November and December to coincide with the Star Trek convention that's happening in San Francisco.
So this is a gay Star Trek.
We do.
You're on a very gay voyage.
It's all women playing all the men. So a female cast. It's really great.
Is it original Star Trek or Next Generation?
Right now we're still working on original Star Trek,
right.
But we are eventually going to do Next Generation. But
very cool.
Back to Sex in the City.
Yes.
Which is happening now.
June 16th through July 2nd, I read.
Right, going through July 2nd. And we've got 2 shows on Thursdays. We do a late night show that gets a little more raunchy. And then we do, 2 shows on Thursday, then Friday and Saturday at 7 o'clock, sfoasis.com, where you can get tickets. And I will say this, it's our 5th year, I'd say in our 3rd year, Darren Starr came to see the show, who created the show.
And I talked to him.
About the show?
Yeah, well, I interviewed
nervous.
Him about Sex in the City.
Oh, my God. Well, he came to see us, and we sat there horrified. He was in the first row.
Oh, my gosh.
His friends told us they were bringing him to surprise him. And we thought either he's going to shut us down, like he's going to just shut this down, or hopefully he would like it. And we sat there watching him from backstage when we weren't on stage, just nervously watching his face. And
is he straight?
Absolutely not.
Okay, then I didn't talk to him. Okay.
Gay's a $3 bill.
I talked to somebody who wrote.
Oh, was one of the writers.
One of the writers, and totally straight guy. And he said, I had to go over there with all of these girls, these women, and these gay guys, and try to explain straight sex to them.
Oh, God, how fun.
Yeah. I mean, he got into the whole thing. He goes, because they didn't understand, like, the whole oral thing.
Sure, of course.
Right, and how that would work. And,
that's
and
hilarious.
All the gay guys are going, ooh, I don't know. I mean, you know. Okay.
Well, no, Darren Star is totally gay, and he loved it.
Okay,
and he
great.
Came up on stage with us afterwards, and he whispered in my ear, he said, it was funnier than it was on TV.
Oh,
which
nice.
To me was like,
that's
you know,
a compliment, right?
The Pope coming down and blessing you.
Bless.
But it, I mean, in a way, because we give it the sitcom treatment, because it really wasn't a sitcom. It was a kind of slice of life comedy. And we give it very much the ba-dum-bum.
The campy.
Yes. And we you know, we add to it a little bit and make it more funny. We've got some hilarious drag queens in the other roles. And it really has kind of taken on a life of its own.
Right.
It is. And it's what's also really interesting is, you know, we've got to have Carrie's outfits made because she was so her outfits were so crazy all the time. So those have to be custom made. But a lot of the other outfits you can still buy. Like we can go to like sometimes Ross Dress for Less and find something. And you realize that Patricia Fields, who did the costumes for that, was so ahead of her time that. Clothes that they were wearing in the late 90s and the early 2000s are what are now on the rack 15 years
really?
Later, you
huh.
know, for the mainstream population, which is kind of crazy.
That is. Right.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so here's another. This is a messed up thing about
oh,
sex.
And this
is,
shoot.
Okay, no. This is about Carrie's.
Well, you got to go there.
Carrie's net worth is inexplicable. In Ring-A-Ding-Ding, season 4, episode 16,
yes,
Ring a Bell, Darcy.
Of course.
Okay. Our narrator is offered the opportunity to buy her own co-op, 35-year-old Carrie. Only has a total of $1,657 to her name. Somehow this 35-year-old woman did not realize that spending $40,000 on shoes was not a sound financial investment.
Okay, well, let's be real. Let's just talk about the Carrie Bradshaw character. It's kind of like Friends, where they lived in that giant apartment. She has this huge apartment on the Upper East Side. She writes a column in what is like the New York Post.
Right.
Where maybe she would make, I don't know, $500 a week.
Right.
You know,
you're not on the Upper East Side.
She spends $500 on Manolo Blahniks all the time, her
yes.
shoe collection. She's constantly got money. And her outfits, everything. It is the fantasy of New York. It is so, so not reality.
No.
Especially her character. You know, I mean, it just isn't.
And you have to know something if you don't know anything about New York. Even most media moguls do not live on the Upper East Side.
Well,
I mean, that's how expensive it is.
Well,
if you're a mogul, let me take that back. If you're just a regular schmo like me, it's a talk show host or whatever, you would not be on the Upper East Side.
Especially in a brownstone. I'm sorry.
No, of course not.
But here's
not.
The more trivia.
Brooklyn.
So I used to live in New York, and I lived on the block on Perry and Bleecker where they shot the exterior of Carrie's apartment.
Oh, funny.
And that was, and which was not on the Upper East Side. It was in the West Village.
Yeah.
And at that point, no one knew the show was going to be so popular. I mean, when it first started, the first season isn't so great. They hadn't got their rhythm. They hadn't figured out who these women's voices were or anything. So I didn't really pay much attention to it. But they would block our street off constantly and I remember when the second season, I was still living there, and I saw Cynthia Nixon and Sarah Jessica Parker, and I ran out, and I had the VHS box set of Girls Just Want to Have Fun, which was a movie that she made with Shannon Doherty and Helen Hunt
in the
80s. And I ran out to her, and she was on a break from filming, and I had her autograph, My Girls Just Want to Have Fun, VHS, and she was not having it at all. But what you think? Appreciate what you've done, right? But now I go back to visit, and that stoop has a giant chain across it, big signs that say no flash photographies, because there are Sex and the City tours that come through.
Wow, yeah.
And these people who had rented out their stoop, basically, for filming are accosted on a daily basis.
Right.
Now,
it's like the TMZ tour in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You can't
or the
get
Full House
from.
House here in San Francisco.
I know. Which is crazy. But I will say this. We have a blast on stage, and the women we have a gay audience too that come to see it. Like I said, it started out mostly a gay audience, and it became girls' night out.
Oh, and it just can't be fun.
But it's so fun, and people love these characters. They love them, and they love and they know these episodes so well. A lot of times they'll chant along the lines with us.
Oh my god!
But it is that. I mean, it's a giant fashion show. It's a bunch of drag queens, and it's doing the things that they love. And it really, as an artist, I used to kind of fight against giving people what they want. But this doing this show is really, I gotta say,
you gotta play the hits.
It's kind of satisfying, yeah. You know.
When and where again?
We're at SF Oasis. That is, it's playing every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday through July 2nd. You get tickets at sfoasis.com.
Okay, we'll hook
it
up.
That's on our Twitter page, so if anybody wants to check it out, they can just go straight there.
At Generation Drex, D-R-E-X, Darcy Drollinger. We'll be right back to finish our conversation. But right now, I want to tell you that we are proudly supporting the Sonoma Marin County Fair, which is happening June 22nd through the 26th. At the Sonoma County Events Center and Fairgrounds. And I'll tell you what, we'll take caller right now and you will win a family four-pack of tickets. And you can do this all week with me. I'll be having four packs. Sounds like fun. All week long. Check out the world's ugliest dog competition, the North of the Gate wine competition, lots of food, rides, and entertainment and more. Get tickets and events and all the information at Sonoma-MarinFair.com. I'm sorry, .org. Sonoma-MarinFair.org. Okay, caller 10 to win right now a family four-pack, 808-0810. More of the Drex Radio Show on the way with a look at traffic. Here's Lee Graham.
KGO 810 Traffic.
Blinger is my guest. He's the director of Sex and the City and owner of the Oasis nightclub. You know, one thing, I was looking at this this article I pulled today from Vulture, messed up things about Sex and the City. Carrie doesn't understand bisexuals. For a woman who writes a sex column, Carrie Bradshaw has a spectacularly narrow view of sexuality in Boy, Girl, Boy, Girl, season 3, episode 4.
We did that episode.
You did that episode.
6 months ago.
Carrie dates a bisexual man, so I guess yes. She doesn't get it.
She doesn't. She absolutely doesn't. And, you know, Alanis Morissette she guest stars in that episode and kisses Carrie Bradshaw at the end. I played Alanis Morissette as well as Samantha in that one.
Oh, my God.
I remember that kiss.
Alanis Morissette.
Remember her? Yeah. The 90s?
She had so many teeth in that episode. That
kiss
was just teeth.
You don't actually sing ironic, dude.
No, we played it.
Oh, God. That's like,
we had to. We said some lines. Like, is there a fly in my Chardonnay? You know, we did all the lines.
Yeah.
You couldn't help it.
What was the other one? Samantha dates a black man. Oh, well, I did that one. Okay. What about the Russian? One of the show's final season.
We don't do so much of season 6. It gets kind of depressing when Samantha gets cancer, and suddenly it's like funny. Right, so yeah. We don't do all the ones where Carrie goes off with Brishnikov to Paris, and we don't do too much of season 1. So it's really we mostly concentrate on season 2 to 5
when they were nailing it.
That's when it was just really happening. Season 5 gets a little weird because that's when Sarah Jessica Parker was pregnant, so it was only like a half a season, and all her clothes are really like full and flowy, and then they only did like 6 episodes that season.
Carrie doesn't understand computers. Carrie, a writer, gets an AOL account and hides it under her desk so her ex-boyfriend doesn't see her when she's online. Just leave it at that.
She won't get a cell phone either for the longest time.
Oh, my God.
But I will say this, too. As a prop in the show, we used my very first cell phone that my company gave me in 1996.
Whoa, what does that look
like? And it looks like a brick. Yes. It's ginormous. And you open it up fantastic. And you pull up the antenna. So we do have some authentic 90s props.
All right. Darcy Drollinger, thank you very much. And let's come back and talk about gay pride.
All right.
Okay. All right. We will. Have a great night. The John Bachelor Show is coming up next on KGO 810.